Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Kyler Murray. Now, from the outside, it would appear that everything has been going pretty well for Kyler Murray of late. He gets drafted with the 9th pick overall in 2018 in the MLB draft by Oakland. He signs with them. He gets a nearly $5 million signing bonus. He gets their blessing to try to win the quarterback job and play a year at Oklahoma. Good start, right? Guy can have his cake and eat it too. He wins the starting quarterback job. He wins a bunch of games. He does some of the freakiest things you'll ever see on a football field and, in fact, wins the Heisman Trophy. Then he decides that he's going to play football. He goes to Indianapolis. He shows up the combine. He gets the measurements that he needs, and he shuts everybody up. And then suddenly, it seems like a real possibility that not only will he go in the first round, but he might go first overall. Again, absolutely everything is going this guy's way. It's all good. Until yesterday, because that's when the NFL Network's Charlie Casserly came out with the biggest bucket of ice water ever. Like Casserly rolled into his home studio with Niagara Falls on his back and just started dumping it all over Murray. Here is the quote from the NFL media Twitter account.
Well, you better hope Kingsbury takes him number one, because this was not good. This was the worst comments I ever got on a high-rated quarterback.
Really?
And I've been doing this a long time. I'm probably doing it longer than you're alive anyway.
You have. That's why I said leadership. Really?
Yes, leadership, not good. Okay, study habits, not good. The board work, below not good. Not good at all in any of those areas, see? And raising major concerns about what this guy's going to do. Now, people will say, well, we're going to compare him to Mahomes. We're going to run an offense like Mahomes. We're going to run an offense like Baker Mayfield. Well, you can. And by the way, Friday, tune in up to minute. I'll show you the offense you're going to run with this guy. It is possible. But those guys are much different. I mean, those guys, you never question about their ability on the board. You never question their leadership ability, their work habits. They were outstanding in those areas. This guy's not outstanding in those areas. It showed up in the interview.
Charlie Casserly along with Andrew Siciliano. And what can I say, but damn, that was an absolute takedown, a beatdown. Kyler Murray's reputation hit the canvas early in that answer. And then there's Casserly on top of this guy landing one hammer fist after another. He went classic ground and pound. And Murray's rep was just eating punches. Leadership, not good. Study habits, not good. The board work, below not good. I mean, like, this dude's out cold on the canvas, and Casserly is still stomping on his head. And that's exactly what you don't want to hear about a player, especially a quarterback who might go number one overall. And while each of those not good shouts were rough, do not sleep on this early haymaker. Quote, these were the worst comments I ever got on a top-rated quarterback, and I've been doing this a long time. End quote. So, like, where's the ref? Somebody needed to step in there and pull Casserly off of Murray because Murray could not defend himself. So the biggest question about Murray was whether or not he could take the pounding of the NFL, but he just took the pounding of the NFL draft. And it got worse because Casserly was not done. He had not tired himself out from that early flurry. It's like this guy's a well-conditioned guy when it comes to dropping bombs. And then he kept unloading. Quote, in the interviews, I got exactly the same stories. They were not impressed with his leadership skills or potential for the interview. They weren't impressed with his study habits. And I can't give you the quotes, but they're pretty bad. And they were not impressed with his board work and understanding football concepts that he was quizzed on. And that wasn't good. I can't give you the quotes. It was the worst report I have ever heard on a top-ranked quarterback from the interview part of it. One thing that stuck out to me, this guy was never trained for the interview. Whoever trained him did a poor job. Guys do get trained for interviews now. End of quote. Damn, Charlie, are you done yet? I hope you are. I'm exhausted after that complete and total hospital job, and I had nothing to do with it. All right, so what do we do with all this? What do we do with all this info? Is that all real? Is Murray the worst ever, or is it all negative spin? Did he have a bad session with one team? Did he have bad sessions with every team? Or Did he have no bad sessions with any team, and somebody's just trying to kill his reputation so he will fall to them in the draft? The answer, who the hell knows? Who knows? We don't know anything at this point, and in the build-up to the draft, it is impossible to believe anything at all. There are so many agendas, so much smoke, so many suggestions, hints, rumors, reports, anonymous sources, that it all has to go out the window. I mean, I'm not even totally sure that I agree with Casserly's comments that nobody ever questioned Baker Mayfield's leadership. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, Baker was routinely compared to Johnny Manziel in the build-up to last year's draft. Now, don't get me wrong. It was a comparison that was an absolute joke. It was all wrong, especially now that Manziel has bombed out of the CFL and Mayfield is killing it in Cleveland. Mayfield is a stud. He's America's quarterback, playing for America's coach on America's team. Point is, though, this stuff comes up every year on every player who matters. Sometimes it's real, sometimes it's not. It's all part of the process. Everybody gets shredded. Now, it would stand to reason that Murray and his family would have preferred that a report that didn't involve somebody saying, leadership not good, study habits not good, the board work below not good. It would stand to reason that they would hope that that didn't get out there, but it doesn't mean it's true. But then again, it doesn't mean it's not true. In other words, did Murray really show up at Indianapolis and bomb everything with everybody? Maybe. But if he did, it wouldn't have taken until Tuesday for all that to come out. And when Casserly references multiple teams, how many were there? And who were the people telling him? I don't need to go all Woodward and Bernstein on that report to poke holes in it or figure out why a team or two might want that info out there. But again, it doesn't mean it's not true or that there's not some truth to it or absolutely no truth at all. It's freaking draft season. I mean, is it possible that he could have been so ill-prepared for the team interviews that he was a complete mess at the combine? I mean, I guess maybe, but it seems kind of weird, right? The guy wasn't going to throw. He wasn't going to do anything football related, so it would stand to reason he'd get ready for the interviews. It'd be really weird for him to show up and just bomb and be unprepared or ill-prepared. But, and not to flip-flop on you again, then again, he did show up at Radio Row and did not make a really good impression. He was asked about football and baseball and didn't seem ready to answer that question. That was a mess, too. So, did he and his team work on that before these interviews? Maybe. I would imagine. Hard to imagine they wouldn't. Did he work on it and did he not execute? I don't really know. Bottom line, when you get right down to it, it is draft season. Here's your bottom line, too. Even if what Casserly says is true, and there were multiple teams that thought that he messed the bed, it may not matter. It may not matter. All that matters is that one team does like him. And as Daniel Jeremiah pointed out in a tweet, if the Cardinals are shopping Josh Rosen, Kyler Murray aced the only interview that matters. And that's the truth. All the other interviews that he may have bombed, if he did, do not matter if the Cardinals are the ones that like him and thought that he interviewed well. All it takes is one yes, one team to like you, especially if that team is sitting on top. The only thing that you can count on is the draft is April 25th, which means that we have more than a month left for reports like this to come out. And the only way we'll know how much those reports matter is what time Murray's name is called in Nashville. Then we'll know. I would not buy into it. Might be true, might not be true. Might be somebody who's trying to get this guy to drop to them. Or maybe he had a really bad interview, or two, or five. Or maybe he didn't. Who the hell knows? It's draft season. We'll find out. Russell Turner is my guest. Russ, nice to have you back on the show. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. It's great to be with you. I can't thank you enough for having me and UC Irvine on the show.
Russell, it is great to talk to you, and it's great to talk UCI basketball. Let me ask you this first. You beat UC Riverside Saturday, and you wrapped up the Big West regular season title. As I mentioned, that gives you 25 wins on the year, most in regular season school history. You've won 11 straight. How is life around UCI and on campus right now?
Life is always good on campus at UC Irvine. Anybody who's ever been here knows that, and our team is doing well right now. I'm pleased with that, and yet we're still hungry. I've got a group that's as competitive as any I've been around, and they love the fact that I'm pushing them and they're also pushing me, so we have high hopes for what's still to come.
You know, I was there not long ago, Russ. I was in your house, and you guys are hungry. They play hard. That's a group that plays really, really hard. It is absolutely pouring today in Southern California, but I'm not sweating it. You know why that is? Because I got my windshield wipers from O'Reilly Auto Parts. Fact, when it gets cold out there, your vehicle needs extra attention. O'Reilly Auto Parts has everything you need to keep your vehicle toasty and warm. From choosing the right antifreeze for your engine to replacing your windshield wiper blades, O'Reilly will help you get your car or truck in fighting shape for the cold weather ahead. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Let me ask you about Jonathan Galloway. He broke the school record for career rebounds, and that title is in addition to a couple of Big West Defensive Player of the Year awards, which he already owns. How much has he meant to the team and to the program overall?
Oh, man, Jonathan Galloway is just a quintessential college basketball player. He's an unbelievable representative of this university. As you mentioned, he's the all-time leading rebounder. He's going to be the first player ever to get the Defensive Player of the Year award for three times. And, you know, his stats don't indicate all the impact he has on us. He's just a winning player. And what I've said recently, Jim, that I think resonates with people is that I haven't been around a guy to have a similar impact on a team since I was an assistant coach for Tim Duncan at Wake Forest. And people know what Tim Duncan became. Before he became all that, we saw the impact he had. Gallo's had that impact here at Irvine.
Yeah, that's amazing praise right there. And I'm going to ask you about your time at Wake Forest in a couple of minutes. Russell Turner is the head coach of UC Irvine. Thing is, you've got some amazing depth on this team. You've got the ability, Russ, to play nine guys, nearly starters' minutes. As a head coach, how valuable is it to have that kind of depth and that kind of options that open things up for you?
Well, it's incredibly valuable to have so much talent that has all been willing to make sacrifices. And that's been the key to our team's success. You know, we do feel like we have at least nine guys who could be considered starters, both with their contributions and the minutes they play. And all of those guys has been willing to sacrifice for their teammates. And I think that's given this team energy and allows us to continue to have momentum deep in the year.
UC Irvine's won 25 games. Their head coach, Russell Turner, is my guest. Now, when you and I spoke on the eve of your first NCAA tournament there back in 2015, we talked about how there had not been a big basketball tradition at UC Irvine, and the word had been that this simply was not a place where you could have success, but now you're in a position now where you can add even more trophies to what you've already done. How much has that narrative changed in recent years?
Yeah, I think the narrative has changed altogether, and I remember vividly where I was standing when I talked to you last on the verge of that first NCAA tournament game. We're still hoping, you know, to break through again in the NCAA tournament because that's such an impactful opportunity for our university if we can do it. We've said now the goal has changed, not just to make the NCAA tournament, but to be in position and good enough to advance. I think that if we can make it this year, we do have a team that's good enough. We'll see if we can continue to build on the goals, but I do think the perception of our program is altogether different. I'm really proud of that, and a lot has gone into that. A lot of people have played part in that, most specifically my players, obviously, and my staff, but it's been a team effort.
UC Irvine head coach Russell Turner, my guest. So in terms of changing that narrative, I know you're not going to pat yourself on the back too much, but over the course of the season, is there a better college team in California than UC Irvine?
I'm glad you asked. I don't think there is. You know, that's obviously an opinion statement, but it's also one I think that can be backed up by the numbers this year. You know, the only team that's ranked higher than we are in California is St. Mary's, and we beat them on their home floor. And one of the things we always struggle with is scheduling the teams in California. We play any of them. This year, some of the ones that are usually good are down, and we're not. We're up. And I do like to promote the fact that if you stacked everybody up, we'd likely be on top this year.
Russell Turner, my guest. Now, if you've had the kind of success that you've had, your name is going to come up for other jobs. So how do you approach that? Do you owe it to yourself to answer the phone when it rings?
I mean, everybody likes, you know, to be recognized for being solid at what they do. But what I'll say to you on that, Jim, is that if you've been here, you've been on this campus, I've got a great life here. I've got a great team and a program and a place where I fit really well. And I could see myself being here for a long time, like other coaches I've admired have done. You know, Bob McKillop at Davidson has been his place for a long time. Randy Bennett at St. Mary has been his place for a long time. Mark Few at Gonzaga has been his place for a long time. I think there's not much better in coaching than to feel like you've got a great fit. And I feel like I've got that with my players and our program here.
We're talking to UCI head coach Russell Turner. You know, going back to something we talked about, you played your college ball at Hampton Sydney, where you were a Division III All-American, and then you served as an assistant there before you went to work for Dave Odom at Wake Forest, which meant you were coaching Tim Duncan, and then you chased that by coaching Steph Curry in Golden State. There are not too many people on the planet who can say they've coached both guys. What were those experiences like?
Yeah, those are incredible experiences to draw from. You know, as an athlete, I'm not an athlete anymore, but to watch those incredibly high-level athletes and all the things that go into making them good, and then from a coaching standpoint, to see the impact that those two had was just remarkable. You know, having coached two-time NBA MVPs, what I stress to my players is the things they have in common, and that's their character and their commitment to the game and their ability to make other players better. Both of those two guys have that more than any other athletes I've been around. And I think that they also have great basketball brains, great brains in general, but great brains for the game. And we recruit to that here. What I like to think we do is help our players get better, just as I watched Tim get incredibly better and Steph get incredibly better. They kept doing that throughout their careers, and that's what we try to get our players to do.
Yeah, Russ, one more thing about Steph. When he first entered the NBA, he clearly was not in the physical shape that he's in right now. What do you remember about the early days with Steph?
Well, first of all, Don Nelson, you know, said from the beginning that he thought he'd be a superstar. And so I give Nelly credit for, you know, seeing down the road on that. But Steph did, you know, struggle a little bit physically when he began in the NBA. The story I tell guys is remembering going to Madison Square Garden the first time, and Nelly, I think, either didn't start him or pulled him out of the game real quickly and barely played him in that game. And it was almost like he was testing Steph's resolve to be good or something. He made it hard on him, and there's probably nothing better Nelly could have done than to present that type of, you know, challenge to Steph and to see the way that he attacked it every day. You know, Steph was incredible in his just determination and his belief in himself and his, you know, just drive to get better. I think that's the thing that separates the guys who end up being the best is their drive to get better and just feel really fortunate to be around him. It was a lot of fun.
Hey, Russ, speaking of Nelly, did you see our press conference recently? It looks like our man is living the very best life in Maui. Did you get a look at him, and have you spoken to him recently?
Yeah, I have spoken to him, and last time I spoke to him was before I saw that interview, and if I had seen the interview and I told Nelly, it looked like he joined a motorcycle gang. And since that interview, I've told people that I'm not on the Nelly coaching tree, but I'm one of the roots on the Nelly coaching weed.
Great. Russell Turner, my guest. I got to be honest, Russ. Now, you know I'm a gaucho, and you may or may not know, but I brought the family out the last 2 years to watch you guys go up against my alma mater, UCSB. Let's just say y'all have not been very hospitable to the Rome family. I mean, come on, Russ. I put you on the show. You punch us in the face. That's not too cool.
Hey, that's not the way I've thought of it. I mean, you know, I do appreciate everything you're doing for me, and you know, we'll give you some luxury seats next time you come over here if you just let me know.
Yeah, you guys always do. That's not a concern. Russell Turner, the head coach of UCI, they're 25-5. They're 13-1 in conference. They've got a game at Cal Poly on Thursday night. Russ, nice to have you back on. You know I'm watching closely, and it's always good to talk some ball with you.
Hey, man, I appreciate it, Jim. Keep doing your thing.
Hump Day's Daily Jungle is repped by ZipRecruiter. As any coach or GM will tell you, the foundation of any great team is great talent. So it's no surprise the teams dedicate so much time and effort towards finding the right players. The same exact rule applies to you when it comes to hiring. You've got to find the top talent, but you don't have endless resources to find it. Luckily, what you do have is ZipRecruiter. They scout talent for you. With ZipRecruiter, one click, send your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards. But they don't stop there. Their powerful matching technology scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. It is so effective that 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate right through the site within the very first day. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/clones. 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 This service is amazing. I use it myself. It would be foolish not to try it right now. ZipRecruiter.com/clones. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. All right, so I mentioned it yesterday, but there is a little more now to get into regarding that Pac-Man Jones arrest story. Now, in case you have not been following the Indiana Gaming Commission enforcement beat, let me catch you up on some of the deets. Jones was arrested on February 27th on a myriad of charges after he was accused of cheating at a table game in the Rising Star Casino Resort. Now, I'll be honest. I mean, I can remember I interviewed Pac-Man coming out of college before he was drafted. I sat down with him on JRIB. That's how far back I go with him. So I really wanted to see him turn things around. But if you had told me that a former Pro Bowler had been arrested for allegedly cheating at table games at the Rising Star Casino Resort, Adam Pac-Man Jones probably would have been at the very top of my list. I said it yesterday, I'll repeat it for you right now. Nothing good happens at 3:17 a.m. at the Rising Star Casino Resort. But for those who do not know, according to the World Wide Web, the Rising Star Casino Resort is a riverboat casino and a resort on the Ohio River. They have bonkers comedy productions in the Windsor Lounge. Clint Black is playing in the Grand Theater later this month. But last week at 3:17 a.m., they reportedly had Pac-Man Jones cheating in table games. Now, as soon as that story broke, you might have thought what I thought. I mean, was your first reaction not, what's the allegation? How was he allegedly cheating? Was he counting cards? Was he marking cards? Did he have help on the inside? Was he card switching? Was he hand mucking? Was he using a hidden camera? Nope, 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 and nope. Note all the above. Instead of some like really crazy, glamorous scheme with hidden cameras, earpieces, technology. Nope. Pac was allegedly just capping bets. You know, that incredible move where you win a table game and then you try to slide more chips onto your bet as soon as you know you've won. Like, say you bet 50 and then you see that you've won, you immediately try to slide out another 50 or a hundy to get paid on the new amount. Because that always works. Because they never know about that. I mean, seriously. That's got to be the worst possible attempt at cheating. Because if the dealer doesn't notice, and generally they do, even if the dealer doesn't notice, the cameras that are trained on every table and every player will. And reportedly, Indiana Gaming Commission enforcement agents were called after Pac-Man appeared to be cheating. And as you might imagine, he did not take that accusation very well. Really, really not well. According to TMZ, Jones told multiple officials, quote, bleep you. Quote, while moving his hands in a threatening manner and gesturing with his middle finger, according to court docs. End quote. You know how I always say that you know who will go and you know who will not go? We know the guys who will go. Pac will go. Pac-Man will go. We know this. He will go anytime, anywhere, with anybody if he feels he's been disrespected or, in this case, falsely accused. That's a pretty strong start. Notice I said that's a pretty strong start because apparently it gets better. In fact, I know it gets better. According to ICGE agent Christopher Norton, Jones turned to another agent and said, quote, I will kill you. I will whoop your ass, end quote. Can I tell you something? going to a death threat that early with authorities is really, really coming in hot. And sadly, it's really on brand for Pac-Man. It's easy to forget how electric he was on the field back in the day, because frankly, he's been way more prolific off the field than he ever was on the field. And he was electric on the field. And this latest arrest continues that trend. According to TMZ, he was then placed in handcuffs, and it was at that point that Norton alleges he smelled alcohol on Jones. And it still was not over, because while Jones was being taken to the gaming office, he continued jawing with the officer, saying, among other things, "Bleep you. You ain't bleep. You ain't nothing but a bleep." Which to me is as incredible a series of remarks from Pac-Man Jones since he called Terrell Pryor garbage repeatedly back in 2016.
I know you talked about it, Adam. What,
garbage.
What did that start with right for there, you, no? Terrell?
Garbage.
There you go, right there, bro. Oh. There you go.
Right, get him out of there. You right see him there, in there?
Oh. Right there.
You better find him somebody to play with.
Is it him saying basically he could
garbage garbage.
All right, Adam. Aside from Terrell, how big is it for you?
Garbage. I ain't talking about Nintendo. I'm happy we won.
All right, cool.
Terrell Pryor, garbage.
All right.
Incredible. Amazing. But if you think the best part of that interview is him repeatedly calling Pryor garbage.
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 You're wrong. That's not the best part. The best part is when he actually leans over into a garbage can and pretends to look for Pryor in the garbage.
You see him in there?
Oh. Right there.
That was amazing. But back to the events at the Riverboat Casino, because it's now about to reach yet another level. According to TMZ, while the agents were handing Jones over to the Ohio County Sheriff's Department, Jones managed to break out of custody and try to make a run for it. End quote. What? He tried to do a runner? Capping bets, cussing out cops, and then breaking free from custody and bolting. My man is having himself a night or a morning. However, he was then recaptured and then allegedly hit the cops with a series of additional zingers, including bleep you, suck my bleep, and you're a bunch of crackers. As well as some other lines that I cannot repeat on this show or any show or podcast that I've ever hosted. And according to TMZ, the final tally, 8 criminal charges, quote, including felony intimidation and felony battery against an officer. The other charges, all misdemeanors, include cheating at gambling, resisting law enforcement, and public intoxication. Look, I'm never going to make light of any of that. Felony intimidation, felony battery, trying to flee from an officer, capping bets. It's all serious. All serious. Nothing to laugh about. But very, very on brand for Adam Jones. I would say have yourself a day, Pac-Man, but it sounds like you already had one. And if the allegations are true, if they are true, and you did those things, and you said those things, then there's only one way to describe that day. Garbage.
Garbage.
Man, I wanted this guy to turn it around. I really did. I really did. But it does not sound like it's turning around. It sounds like a lot of garbage. Christian Wilkins, my man, I'm exhausted. Hey. What's going on? How you doing?
Appreciate you. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate
you. You make me sound a lot better than I actually am.
No, man. Dude, you're good. No. No, you're good, man. You got a good resume. I've done this before, but never in person, so I appreciate you. It's good to see you.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Let me start here. You posted some photos from the Combine on your Instagram account, and you had the message, quote, "Worked all my life for this opportunity. I had a great experience at the Combine. Just smile," end quote. What was the experience like there?
I mean, it was great. Just first of all, just obviously getting invited. It's funny because you watch the Combine your whole life. Just watching the guys, like, man, I hope I get the opportunity to be there one day. Like, that's, you know, that's what I want to work to. And it's just weird, like, you know, seeing it on TV, then actually being there. It's just like, man, this is it. And then you also realize that there's a lot more that goes on, you know, throughout the whole Combine process than just the field stuff. That's actually the fun part and, like, the best part of the week. You know, it's a monster all week, the days leading up to that, because, you know, you're in meetings, you're doing interviews, you're doing a lot of different stuff. You're you're meeting with, you're doing medical stuff and doing all that, and it's just like, man, you know, it's pretty tiring. Like, you're on like 4 or 5 hours of sleep. You're just getting
They don't show that on TV.
Exactly. That's the stuff they don't show. But you know, it was fun to finally just get on the field at the end of it and, you know, try to do my best on the field and doing the position work.
Christian Wilkins joining us in studio. Now, I had Justice Hill from Oklahoma State on the show yesterday. Mm-hmm. He said that none of the teams asked him anything weird, except we know that one guy was asked by the Seahawks to get into a staring contest. Another player said asked him if he had both testicles.
Right.
What was the weirdest thing that you were asked?
I mean, there was like, I can't remember, but there was just like some questions. I was like, I've never been asked that before. Just like little things, like, you know, during like let's say like questionnaires, it'd be like, are you a cat or are you a dog? Like, which one are you more? Like, just little weird things.
What did you say to that?
Like, you just kind of got to choose one. You really don't get to like explain your answer. You just kind of got to choose one, I guess. I think I went with the dog. But yeah, no, just like there's a bunch of funky questions.
I don't know, dude. Like, you want to do the right thing, but I'd be like, I don't know, man, are you a zebra or a donkey?
Right. Yeah.
This has to do with what?
Right.
But you prepare for it, right?
So
you train for it, and you know, like, I mean, how do you approach that? You're not a guy who's not used to showing up big on the big stage. So right. How did you approach it and prepare for that?
Really, you can't really prepare for it. You just kind of got to like just go in like expecting the unexpected and like have the mindset like, all right, anything could be asked. I could go through anything. Like, you know, just be prepared for whatever. Just be ready for whatever they throw at me, and just roll with the punches. Just embrace it all and take it all in.
We're talking to Christian Wilkins. He's joining me in studio. Now, you could have entered the draft last year, mm-hmm. and you would have gone really high, but you decided to go back to school. Dabo Swinney said, quote, I was surprised that he came back because it goes against the grain of the culture and where we are in society, end quote. So what went into that, and how come you went back to school?
I feel like, you know, it's funny he said that, too, because, like, I feel like I'm always someone who goes against the grain, kind of like not in a bad way, just like I kind of do, like, you know, I'm just not, I try not to be the typical person or like more than just an athlete at times too. And, you know, always use my platform to, you know, be a person of influence and to make an impact in someone's life and things like that. So, but yeah, there's a lot of reasons why I decided to go back to school, but I mean, I'll give you kind of just a short, and really there was just, you know, it was a gut feeling kind of thing. Like, you know, I had dreams and goals of doing things at Clemson before I got there. And I feel like part of the things I didn't finish, you know, everything. I wasn't done making Clemson a better place than I found it, and, you know, just growing in the areas that I wanted to grow before I went to Clemson. So that led to it from the football side of it. I still like there was parts of my game I could have still really improved on before I made the jump and went to the NFL. I feel like I did those things this year, so that was great. And to top it all off, you know, I just got closer with my teammates, my brothers, for life, and won a national championship at the end of it. You know, and still managed, you know, just to improve on those areas that I wanted to improve on the field. You know, so I just feel, you know, really good about it all and looking forward to these next couple months.
I mean, there's so many things in that. I could talk to you. You and I could talk about things that are non-football related for the entire interview.
Oh, yeah.
Because you are a different guy like that in a really good way. I think that not a lot of people know also that you got enough academic credit to graduate in 2.5 years.
Yeah. So, I graduated.
How much pride do you have in that?
I take a lot of pride in that because not too many people from, first of all, where I grew up ever go to college, let alone graduate. Myself and six of so I come from a big family. I got 8 brothers and sisters, and 6 of us all have college degrees, and the other 2 do have some form of outside education other than high school. So I mean, just the challenge and, like, you know, the competition in the house alone.
It's a standard. Yeah, the exactly. Bar is set high.
Exactly. And not only that, like, graduating in 2.5 years is tough, but we're there all year round, so it was easier to, like, you know, like, add a couple of extra classes here and there, just try to get it all done. That way, if I left after my junior year, I had a degree. And then so actually this last year, too, I got my master's. I was able to get my master's in a year, you know, because I had already got my undergrad and I did things like substitute teaching in my off time.
I was going to ask you about
like
that. You spent some time as a substitute teacher. Oh, yeah. What was that like? How did that go?
Man, that was great. It was really special to do that. You know, I felt like Arnold Schwarzenegger and a kindergarten cop, kind of. Right. You know, you got kids running up to you, crawling all over your leg like, Mr. Wilkins, Mr. Wilkins. And like, it's just funny hearing them call me Mr. Wilkins. Is
you're looking around.
Like,
I'm like, is my dad
who's
around
Mr.
here?
Right, yeah, who's Mr. Wilkins? But it was great because you really go to teach those kids, but you end up learning so much from them, more than you could ever teach them. And just, it's just great to see like their innocence and like, just like, you know, just, it was just good to know that I could have such an impact on their lives. And, you know, because what I realized too at my time at college is that, you know, not a lot of kids have a male teacher, you know, not until they're, you know, in upper education, whether it's high school or college. And, you know, let alone a black male teacher. So I was able to do that and provide that for both, you know, from both sides of the spectrum as well.
Christian Wilkins joins me in studio. One more thought about this, because you had a great line about being a sub. Quote, you have an imaginary sense of what teachers actually do. And I always thought a teacher's lounge was a real thing. I had this whole perception that everybody was sitting around in there smoking cigarettes. Right. End of quote. So how accurate was that? Were the teachers lighting up and burning their heaters in the lounge? Right. Or were they working away and actually getting ready for the curriculum in the classes?
Yeah, no, like when you were a kid, you always thought like the teachers are like, what goes on in there? Just back there smoking
cool
cigarettes,
there, right?
Chilling, right? drinking a little, and just hanging out, like not doing anything, just shooting the breeze. But yeah, no, like during in those teachers' lounges, you know, they're actually, you know, getting ready for next classes. They're eating their lunch or whatever, but they're like, you know, preparing for the next, you know, for the rest of the day. You know, they're still like, you know, they're still also just hanging out, chilling. But, you know, that's kind of like always the perception I had just as a young kid. I must have saw it on like a TV show or a movie and like it just stuck with me, I guess.
Sitting around smoking cigarettes.
Right.
It's really funny. You talk about how some of these kids have never seen like a male role model or an African-American role model. You and I have talked about this in the past. One of the things that you've been able to do over the course of your time at Clemson is honor the memory of your grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
Uri Stamp Sr., he was shot and killed by a police officer in his own home. You wore number 42 to honor him. What was your grandfather like? What kind of an impact did he have on you?
Man, like, so it's funny. Like, people who know my grandfather and see me, they're like, man, you're really your grandfather's, like, grandson. Because, you know, like, when I'm in my hair's in braids now, but he had a big old head full of gray hair. His hair was wild, kind of like how mine is when it's not in braids. And just the biggest outgoing personality. Love everybody he came in contact with. He'd be that guy who'd give you the shut off his back in a second, like, without a question. He'd give you his last dollar just to know that you were okay. You know, so those are things that I try to emulate and, you know, try to, you know, just his outlook on life and just how he was always positive, always happy, always smiling. You know, at least when I saw him, I'm not saying he was a perfect person, but, you know, that's just the perception I had of him. And growing up, I didn't really have my dad around the house. So, like, you know, when I got to see my grandfather, he was that positive male influence, that positive male figure in my life. And so I felt like, you know, once he passed, it was always important for me to, you know, like live the life he would have continued to live and to be his legacy, you know, and just, you know, have him live through me. That was always something that was important. So that's always what I try to do. And just, you know, a lot of my personality is genuine, but it's still like, you know, there's a lot of my grandfather in there as well. And yeah, just wearing the number 42 was always just a sort of motivation for me. He was born in 1942. So, you know, I'm not going to be able to get number 42 in the NFL, but we'll figure something out. I mean, I'll continue to honor him, whether I write, you know, something about him on my shoes or on my tape or just something like, you know, because his life was so important to me and I just want to allow, you know, him to be recognized and, you know, just continue to honor him.
It's great. Christian Wilkins joining me in studio. It's been a couple of months since that national championship game against Bama. At the end of that game, you were pretty emotional on the sideline.
Everybody got to bring up old stuff. I know I was emotional. I'm a bit of an ugly crier.
Better to bring up good. It's better to bring up good old stuff than bad old stuff.
Y'all don't have to show that on the TV to make sure they don't
show
the
playback. Now you're producing, bro. Now you're producing, big dog. If you want, I could. I'm sure they've got that somewhere.
Thanks. No, y'all don't have to. Don't do it.
All right, man. That's awesome. Yeah, how about this then? Like, can you express like what was going on? Like, I bring it up, well, because it was cool and emotional.
Yeah.
None of us have ever done that. Like, what goes through your mind in something like that?
It's just like, first and foremost, like, I just truly just love the game of football so much. And I give literally everything I have into the game, week in and week out, day in and day out. Like, everything that my life, like, everything I focus my life to, like, goes back to football. Like, I can't eat this. Like, I can't stay up late because I need sleep so I can work out. And, like, you know, just little things
like
that.
Every choice.
Every choice you make goes back to football, you know, and just have such a love and appreciation for everything it does and how much it's done for me in my life and the places it's taken me. So, I mean, just to put your all into the game, just that alone, let alone with everything we went through together. Like, you know, there's a lot of stuff that goes on behind closed doors. You know, as a team and just that people stuff that people didn't know about and just everything and just, you know, deciding to come back another year and like, you don't know, that was the result of it. And it just all hit me at once and I just, you know, couldn't hold it in and just, you know, my emotions just got the best of me, you know, and just let it all out.
Big dog, was that so hard? That was actually pretty cool.
No, that was a good answer.
That was a really good answer. I could see it.
Yeah.
All right. So, listen, when Dabo made the decision to start Trevor Lawrence this season, there's this now famous story that you were taking him out to breakfast, and you've been really humble about this whole thing. You were saying, look, I was hungry. Trevor had a car. There's nothing to it.
Right.
But it seems like maybe it was a little bit bigger than that. What was the thinking behind it, and what's to say about how you approached your role in the locker room?
No, I was just taking, like I said.
You were hungry, he had a car.
I was taking a cute blonde on a date. You know, that's all it was. No, but really just – you know, I don't make a big deal out of it because it's, I mean, it's something I just do for my teammates. I always do little things like that, you know, just to learn and grow with my teammates and appreciate them just a little bit more, learn a little something about them. Like Trevor wasn't the first team I'd ever did something like that with, and he for sure won't be the last, you know, throughout my life. And so, like, but especially in his situation, I just wanted to see where his head was at a little bit. Like, you know, you're coming in as a young guy, you're 18 years old. Now you're asked to be the quarterback of, you know, the best program, like, you know, after the, like, one of the best programs in college football. So it's like, I mean, that's a tough task. Like, I had pressure as a freshman coming in, but not to the same extent. Like, I had to play a little bit, but I wasn't starting right away. But I had to play and contribute, and, like, it was still a lot on me. So I just tried to be that mentor for him a little bit and just help him and guide him along the way. It really was nothing to it, you know, just and other than that, I was hungry. I didn't have, like you said, I was hungry. I didn't have a car on
and
campus.
You need transportation.
Did. Right, and I needed transportation, so we went to have breakfast.
You know, his play kind of speaks for where he was at mentally, but, like, how do you answer that question? I mean, I think that's a really good point on your part that you're a young guy, you're coming in, we're the biggest program in the game right now. That's a big ask. Right. I want to see where his head's at. Where was his head at?
No, I mean, he's as cool as it can be like that, and I feel like that's just a testament, like, to – there's a reason he's been so successful already in his time, just because he's so nonchalant, just so laid back, so cool, like, just wants to play the game, just loves the game, you know, always appreciative of his opportunities, but, you know, he's just a cool customer. Like, there's people in life who are low maintenance or high maintenance. He's really, like, no maintenance. Like, he doesn't care. Like, you know, he's just like, yeah, whatever. Like, you know, like, he doesn't, you know, he just does his job, show up, does everything you ask, and, you know, and that's it. And, I mean, he's, you know, he's a special kid. Off the field and just on the field too. You see that arm, the way he can sling it, the way he can throw it around. I mean, that special talent speaks for itself.
All right, so you made the point. I mean, like, literally every decision has gone into where you are right now. It's your time. It's your time. Mm-hmm. What do you want an NFL team to know about you, not only in terms of the impact you'll have on the field, but also in the locker room and in the facility? What are they getting when they draft Christian Wilkins?
Well, the biggest thing is, it's like, when you draft me, like, you're investing in something. Like, when you draft a player, you're investing in them long-term. And I feel like you can't go wrong with investing in me, just because of the simple fact that I could be that guy who's dominant and disruptive and doing their job on the field, but off the field, you know, I'll bring all the positive attention to your organization and do those things in the community and build relationships. I'm going to know everybody's name in the building as soon as I can. Just really, because I just have an appreciation for everyone and everybody's role. And that's something that was, you know, like, I kind of already had that mindset, but it was further instilled in me at Clemson. And not only that, just like, you know, there's so much I could do for your locker room and just for your team. And, you know, people are just going to respect me, you know, and admire, you know, the way I go about myself. And, you know, that's something I'm going to try to, you know, I'm going to have to earn over time and, you know, prove to people. But, I'm, you know, that's what I'm going to try to do from day one.
So, final thought, the folks at Clemson would say just that. In your bio on the Clemson website, it reads, concluded a stellar four-year career as one of Clemson's most decorated and most beloved figures, end of quote. So that second part of that, what's that mean to you? Most beloved figures. What's it mean to you to know that your impact there goes beyond just the numbers?
I mean, it's great because, you know, that's something, because I want, when football is all said and done, and because football is such a short time in your life, like, hopefully I play this game another 10 years at least. But then after that, I'll be an early 30-something-year-old. Oh, man, I got, you know, hopefully 70,
easy,
80 more years.
Easy, big dog. A 30-something-year-old old man?
Yeah, right, yeah.
30-year-old man or an old man at 30?
Right, right.
Can I get clarification on
I'll
that?
I'll be 30-something-year-old man. Okay. And so my thing is, it's like, you know, like, I'm going to have a huge life to live after that. And, you know, but while I play this game, I'm going to put my all into it and try to be as special as I can and do everything I can on the field. But I also want my name to hold weight, you know, after football, you know, because it's more important to me. Well, what people think of me as a man and as a person than just a football player.
Christian Wilkins in studio. Let me send you out with a couple of tweets. These are directed at you. E-Patches 2000 tweets. Hands down, after this Jim Rome interview, I love this guy. I hope he stays for the or plays for the Buffalo Bills, and I have to cheer for this kid. Down to earth, please stay this way.
Oh, what's his name? I appreciate you. Thanks for the love.
E-Patches 2000.
Appreciate you, E-Patches. Thanks for the love, my dude.
Stover Jake 31 tweets. If I'm a quarterback in the NFL, would not want to look over to the D and see Christian Wilkins. What an interview, going to dominate in the league.
All right, so appreciate these guys, you too. Thank
they're,
you.
They're not Clemson fans. These are guys who are fans of you, right, who like what they're hearing and like what they're saying.
Yeah.
Listen, you and I have done this before, but we had to come together in person. I really appreciate you. Good to spend time with you. Take care of your business. And as soon as you find a place to live and work, you know I'll be looking for you again.
All right, good deal. Appreciate you having me. Thank you.
Bob in Los Angeles. It's good to have you, Bob. How are you?
Jim, I'm way against you on this one, buddy. Way against you.
Talk to me.
They should. should, first of all, they should run him every single game. Every single game, run his ass down. The reason why, the best reason why, is the fans in the stands. I mean, there are people out there, not Jack Nicholson and the other guys who can afford it, but there are people who bought tickets way in advance of that, maybe once in their lives, to see the Lakers. They bought LeBron shirts. They got their kids coming. And what did the Lakers organization do? Have a terrible season like this. If they shut him down and this guy has to come to the Laker game with his kid with his nice Laker jacket on, and he sees five clowns out there running around playing basketball, and LeBron is four floors down being massaged and rubbed for next year. I mean, that is so bad I can't even explain it. So if for any reason at all the Lakers even think about doing that, I mean, that would be more shameful and regrettable than their season of not making the playoffs. That's the way I feel about it.
I got you, Bob. Listen, I appreciate you. Let me jump in and respond before I wrap up this hour. So do you want to waste another year, much less 4 years, with LeBron? What kind of a take is that? Hey, Rome, you know what they should do? They shouldn't sit him down. They should, quote, run his ass down. And why would they do that? Because fans bought tickets, and they deserve the right to see him, quote, get hit, run his ass down. What kind of a take is that? What are you talking about? Hey, Rome, I bought that ticket. My kids are never going to get a chance to see LeBron, so they're going to go to the game, and we're going to watch them run his ass down. All 48 minutes. I don't care if they lose by 48 points. You run his ass down. All 48 minutes. Listen, if you want to get him some minutes and let him play and spot him down the stretch, that's fine. But, quote, running his ass down is absurd. Rod Brindamore joining us.
Appreciate having me on. Yeah, we got a, you know, good little roll going here. Fun team to coach, and, you know, we got to keep it going.
My man, you got a real good thing going on right here, and it's a great thing to talk about. So let me ask you, Boston got you last night, but you still earned a point on the road, Rod, against a tough team, but you'd won five straight going in. So let me start there. How do you go about handling a result like that? Do you immediately flush it and move on, or does it linger a little bit?
Well, I think it you know, you want to flush it and move on, especially this time of year, but it lingers a little, and that's the good thing. We, you know, we're at a point. And I don't know what we're near the end of the year. We're getting there, but the expectations on this team have really risen. And you know, the guys go in every night now expecting to win. Whether you're playing the Bruins or the Lightning or you know all the best teams, you know we feel like we can win. And I think that's a huge change from what we've had here in the last few years. And a testament to the group. I mean, we got great leadership here. A guy you know well, Justin Williams, is really just taken off, and you know he's led this group.
Rod Brindamore joining us. Rod, it's amazing how quickly this thing has turned. I mean, it wasn't easy, but it's been relatively quickly. For instance, it's a franchise that has struggled for a little while. They had not reached the playoffs since 2009, but you've already equaled the highest win total since 2011. When you were named head coach back in May, what did you make of where the team was?
Well, I knew we have good young talent, and, you know, we've got some young players still that are relatively unknown in the hockey world, and they're on the rise, so that's a great thing. And I knew that we had good leadership in there, and that's the key. You know, I mentioned Justin Williams already, but bringing him in last year, he kind of, you know, didn't really, for whatever reason, we didn't make him our captain, but now we have, and he's just taken off. And we got some good young players, like I said. We got an 18-year-old that's on the rise, and then our Sebastian Aho is probably, you know, one of the best unknown players around, and he just continues to get better and better. So we look good for right now, but I like the future of this team.
Rod Brindamore joining us. I know, Rod, you're going to make it about the team for sure, but let me make it about you for 1 minute. And I bring this up because team owner Tom Dundon said of you, quote, "Roddy has, in essence, been a one-man rebranding. What it means to be a Hurricane means something different to him than it does to everybody else," end quote. So what does it mean to you to be a Hurricane? How would you define that?
A good question. Well, this is my home. I got brought here in January of 2000, and you know the hockey had just started here, and they show a lot of faith in me when I wasn't playing well, and it just, I don't know, it just stuck with me that it just means something for me to see hockey grow here, and we took it to a good place, and then it kind of fell off the map, and that hurt more than anything. So I just, you know what, I think I've, you cut me open. I think I'm bleeding Hurricane red here, and it's just my family's from here. growing up here. I want to see it, succeed. And so I think that's kind of what Tom's talking about. And, you know, he's a unique owner. We have a great relationship. He's all in, and it's a fun time right now.
Rod Brindamore, my guest. You know, Rod, maybe answer my next question when you answer that. But let me say this point, too. He also made the point that when you were hired, you didn't need that job. You had a really good life going. You were willing to put your reputation, maybe even your legacy on the line by taking that head coaching job. So why was that something that felt like it was worth the risk? And why did you take that on?
Well, it's a challenge. But, I mean, you know what, Romy, to be honest with you, I was assistant coach for, I think, 7 years. And you're putting the same amount of hours as a head coach, and you just don't get to put your fingerprint on it. And I felt like before I was done with hockey, why not give it a shot and at least see if the things that I think could work would work. And, you know, you just certainly don't want to have any regrets in your career. And this is it was an opportunity. And, again, I know all these players. You know, I had a great relationship with them going in, and I just felt like I wanted to give it a crack. And, you know, so far it's been great. And like I said, Tom's been great. I mean, anything we need, he's all in. He's trying to, you know, build something special, and he's unique. I mean, we do some crazy stuff, but it's all for, you know, for trying to be the best. And that's what I love. He wants to be the best, and that's what we're trying to be.
There's some crazy stuff. There's some fun stuff, which I'll get to in a minute, Rod. But, you know, when you and I used to talk when you played, you always had this amazing work ethic as a player. It was the stuff of literally absolute legend. Where did that come from? And is that something that you can teach other guys, or do they just have to have it by the time they get to that level?
Well, I think it's a bit of both. I think you definitely, you know, I think it's in you a little bit. But I also know that in my case, I mean, I wasn't the best player, but I felt like that was the way I could compete with the best, if you just, you know, if you all worked them. And I think that's kind of where we've started here. Day one was the mental approach that we brought was, you know, we're never going to get outworked. And everyone says that, you know, and I think in every sport and every, you know, coach will bring that to the message to their group, but our guys have bought into it for whatever reason. And so, you know, we may not be the most talented group out there, but that competitive edge really has giving us a chance to win every night.
Hey, Rod, we talked about the cup. What do you remember? You're looking ahead, but if I get you to look back for 1 minute, back to 2006, what do you remember most about winning the cup as a player in 06?
Oh, man, the run, and just, you know, it's all the people. You know, we had some great, great players, but they're all great, just great people. You know, the Eric Coles of the world and Brett Hedekins and, you know, Glenn Wesley's. Just the relationships you forge for going through all that. You really, I guess, until you've actually been there and done it, it's kind of hard to explain, but you create lifelong memories, and, you know, it was just a special time.
You know, even hearing you mention those names kind of brings me back to that time, and we were having conversations with those guys. Like, nothing will ever replace being in the middle of the action and the rush that comes along with it. Is coaching close to that in any way? Do you ever get that same kind of rush of adrenaline coaching?
You do. I think that's the other part of why I wanted to give it another crack was, you know, obviously you can't play anymore, but that's the next best thing. You're in the fight with the guys, and although, you know, you're not taking any punches, you still feel them. And that's, I guess, that's something that, yeah, man, if you can do it forever, you probably would. It's just fun to be involved. And, you know, you definitely, on the coaching side of it, I think the hard part is the losses hurt a lot more than, I guess, the wins feel good, if that makes any sense. It's, you know, it's, you take it with you, but again, it's fun to have that emotion and be alive again.
Hey, Rod, let me ask you this before you go. One of the ways the team celebrates the wins has been with the storm surge celebrations. Early in the season, you start celebrating the home wins with a Viking clap, and then the celebrations became even more elaborate. You know, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to see, but not everybody seems to get it. And you know this, hockey is a game of respect. There's a fundamental respect amongst the guys who play it, and you don't want to disrespect the game, but there's a line here, right? Like Don Cherry says that your guys have been called a bunch of jerks for the celebrations. Again, I would argue, Rod, they're after the game. You're not disrespecting the opposition. Where do you come out on this?
Well, you just said it. I mean, it's not. We're not talking about the game. We're not talking about before the game. We're not talking about anything during the game. That's full on. We you know, do everything right. This is after the game when, you know, the cameras are off, and this is just a time for the players to do something a little more for the fans that are coming out than just the traditional, you know, wave your stick and go off the ice. And it just kind of morphed into, you know, what it's, you know, kind of gotten into. And when we had the other night, we had, you know, Holyfield come out, and you can't make that stuff up. I mean, that's great. Everyone in the building loved it, and it's for the fans, and they're the ones that are paying to come watch us. And, you know, we need to do everything we can to make it entertaining for them. It has nothing to do with showing up the opponent or doing anything. Everybody's off the ice. This is just pure fun time, and, you know, we put in the work first, and then they can have a little enjoyment with the fans after. Nobody's getting hurt.
No one's getting disrespected, no one's getting hurt, and you got to have some fun. Carolina is at home against Winnipeg on Friday. They're just 4 points out of first in the Metropolitan Division. Work to be done still yet, but what a year it's been already. Rod Brind'Amour, my guest. Rod, I am so glad you and I got caught up finally. So good to have you on the show, Rod. I appreciate it very much.
Thanks, Romy. Appreciate it.
Boise, Andy. It's good to have you, Andy. What's up?
Mr. Rome, good to talk to you.
You too. What's on your mind?
So, check it out. I was a pit boss my last job.
Okay.
And I can give you some good insight on this whole bet capping deal.
Good. Let me know.
So, when something like that happens, a dealer's usually going to tip off the pit boss. Hey, man, I think this guy on third base is capping his bets. You know, they're not going to call him out. Hey, stop doing that. We want to catch him, right? So, the pit boss will then alert his upper, like the manager, casino manager or whatever, and or they'll directly call surveillance, okay? Like you said, they got cameras everywhere. So we'll put the call up. We'll wait 5 minutes. They'll call back down. Oh, yeah, he was definitely cap him, back him off the game, get management, get the gaming agents, whatever. So that tells me they did their due diligence. They caught him red-handed. I don't think that there's any way that he did not cap his bets.
So let me ask you this. When you did that, how often would that happen?
You know, it was pretty rare, honestly. I would say maybe once a month, maybe. Now, when I worked in Kansas City at the time, so the market wasn't like L.A. or I'm sorry, Vegas or anything like that, but there was several casinos there.
So, I mean, would you have to be desperate, dumb, or just an idiot to try something like that?
I'm telling you, we know Pac-Man's past, and I just think that he thought he was above it. He ain't going to get caught. They're not going to mess with me. And believe it or not, casinos are pretty pretty stingy when it comes to giving their money away.
You know, I don't think they care who you are. Care who you are at all.
So, but that being said, I will tell you how to get over on a casino.
Do it.
So what you got to do, you got to call Brad Pitt, Don Cheadle, Matt Damon, all those guys, and get another Ocean's 11 going.
Good night now!